everything that happened in Uvalde, Texas last year on May 24th. And that moment changed my life and my worldview on things and what and my priorities, quite frankly, for what I wanted to do with the rest of my career. Honestly, I was looking at retiring soon, but as I started to see how other politicians were handling that horrible tragedy and really saw how we were broken in Texas, certainly on guns, but on so many other things, I just made this decision to run for the United States Senate. You know, Ted Cruz didn't break it all, but he certainly embodies everything that's wrong with this state. We've got to be able to push back and tell the truth to people and tell Latinos to how we're being treated. And we need to push back, fight back, and take our position in this state. And it's a position of leadership for sure.
Hello, and welcome back to the El Paso Beat. I'm your host, Richard Henera, and we have a fantastic conversation for you today. It is my interview with State Senator Roland Gutierrez, who is running for the U.S. Senate now, self-proclaimed most progressive candidate in the U.S. Senate race. And I gotta say, after listening to this conversation, you will have a hard time disagreeing. I don't have a whole lot for you. I will see you, though, on the other side. All right, folks, I have been very excited for this set of conversations. As you know, the last iteration of the El Paso Beat before the hiatus, I was not shy about how much I wanted Ted Cruz out of his office. And so when I decided to start recording the podcast again, it was in large part because of this race. Granted, we have a lot going on, you know, locally, and there's a lot of other stuff going on, but I really, really, really want to see Ted Cruz gone. And so I figured the best thing to do for this primary, which I knew was going to be a hectic primary, was to make sure that people had the chance to hear from some of the candidates or as many of them as I could. And today's guests are the first candidate that that we're going to be hearing from is Senator Roland Gutierrez. He is I haven't looked at polls or anything, and so I don't know what the breakdown is. But talking to people locally, Roland is up there as the top name for the seat, and so I'm very excited to have him onto the show early on in this conversation. And I do have some other you know questions in mind for him, considering where he represents as a state senator. He represents the area around Uvalde, and so we're gonna dig into a little bit of that and how that fits into his candidacy and his plans. Very excited for all this, and so I'd like to welcome to the El Paso Beat Senator Roland Gutierrez. Welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I look forward to having a robust discussion.
Let's start with you. Let's start with a little bit about yourself.
Well, you know, born and raised in San Antonio, Texas. And, you know, my whole life, I'm the son of immigrants. My parents are from northern Mexico. A place called General Suazua, just north of Monterrey, was where my father came from. He got here in 1950. Just worked hard all of his life. And so we were raised the sons of immigrants. And my mother passed on when I was about 9 months old, and he was left with four boys. My stepmom was from Mexico. She's mom. She raised me. Went on, stayed here locally in San Antonio, went on to graduate from college and then law school. I've been an immigration lawyer for the last 25 years. I've been in the state house now for in the state legislature now for going on 18 years. And prior to that was on San Antonio City Council when I started in 2005. And so I've enjoyed every bit of my life in public service. You know, in addition to my day job of being an immigration lawyer, done a little construction in my life. My wife and I opened an Italian restaurant. Don't ask me why, but that was probably the craziest thing I've ever done. But I think I've topped it now with running for the United States Senate.
I would have to say it goes Senate, Italian restaurant, and then probably state senate for Texas too, because I don't think that that is a very sane idea either. But you know,
well, you know, it was a hard fought race to get to where we were to be the senator from District 19. Ran one time in a special election and lost, and then in the regular election that followed after that, I ran and we won. But I feel like God has really put me in this place. I mean, you know that we experienced everything that happened in Uvalde, Texas last year on May 24th. And that moment changed my life and my worldview on things and what and my priorities, quite frankly, for what I wanted to do with the rest of my career. Honestly, I was looking at retiring soon, but as I started to see how other politicians were handling that horrible tragedy and really saw how we were broken in Texas, certainly on guns, but on so many other things, I just made this decision to run for the United States Senate. You know, Ted Cruz didn't break it all, but he certainly embodies everything that's wrong with this state.
Yeah.
And we've got to be able to push back and tell the truth to people and tell Latinos to how we're being treated. And we need to push back, fight back, and take our position in this state. And it's a position of leadership for sure.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I referenced that El Paso is kind of tied to the area around Uvalde because not with the Senate district, but with congressional district, with the congressional district redistricting, a small portion of El Paso has been drawn into Texas Congressional District 23, which, if correct me if I'm not mistaken, but you would have been eligible to run for that seat as well if you had chosen to. And so I am, you know, I don't like Ted Cruz, but I also don't like, you know, Tony Gonzalez. And so if, you know, if you were running for that seat, I would be equally excited to see you take over in that seat too. And so my question to you is, why Senate instead of the congressional seat?
Well, in reality, you know, I mean, there's some logistical issues right now. Quite frankly, that congressional seat was redistricted in such a way that not many Democrats will ever be able to win it for probably another 10 years until we go back into redistricting.
Okay.
But the fact is that Ted Cruz primarily needs to be beaten. And I saw the people that were jumping into that race and they're nice people. But I think their philosophies are a little bit different than mine, and their and how we win, and their message is different than mine. And I don't think that their message of bipartisan incrementalism, number one, I don't think that that's real anymore in Texas or in the United States.
Okay,
we must win this seat, and the only way we're going to win is if we talk about bold solutions for Texas, like a Medicare for all plan, just like our Congress people have. We have to talk about common sense gun safety solutions. We have to, when we say that we're for reproductive rights, we have to say that we will do it at no matter what cost, which means expanding the Supreme Court, which means getting rid of the filibuster. You know, these half-hearted measures from politicians that run for office and say, oh, we're going to, you know, move the ball, move the needle a little bit. That's just not good enough anymore. These Republicans have destroyed our country. They're not the old school Ronald Reagan Republicans. And those folks weren't all that much better either, but at least there was a little bit of sanity in what they were talking about. You understood
where they were coming from. Right.
They wanted smaller government. I get it. These Republicans don't want smaller government. They want government in your bedroom. They want them in your sex life and your sexuality, and they want you, they want government in our schools. They want to tell kids what books to not read and so on and so forth. And they want to blame all of our problems on marginalized people, which is just ridiculous. Our problems in this state for the last 30 years are absolutely squarely the responsibility of Republicans like Ted Cruz that have argued against you know, taking care of our educational system, against making sure that we have a good, healthy, robust healthcare system, against a good infrastructure grid so that 800 people don't die when it gets cold, like what happened in 2021. You name it, it's out there. You talk about an issue and we'll be able to not only show that these people have done nothing to fix it, mm-hmm. but we'll have real solutions to it. And to simply, you know, use this nice word, oh, we're going to be bipartisan with them. You can't be bipartisan with terrorists. And that's what these people have been.
You know, I a part of me, and particularly in the last time that I had been producing content, I feel like I've might have disagreed with that a little bit more than I would now. I personally have always kind of felt like, yes, Republicans, you know, for the most part, batshit crazy. They're wrong about a whole bunch of stuff. But like, you kind of have to like extend the hand anyway to for them to spit on, and then you just clean it off and try it again, because that's part of politics. In the last handful of weeks, with everything that was going on with Congress and the borderline shutdown, and then McCarthy reneging on his deals, and then trying to get Democrats to sign on, and then like backstabbing them anyway. And it's like, every day that passes, I feel myself feeling like, oh, maybe bipartisanship isn't really possible anymore. And I don't want to feel that way. I feel like that's too cynical. But, you know, I don't totally disagree with you either. I mean, to the sense that, like, you know, they were holding the country hostage, about to shut down the government, and they couldn't even say why. It just goes to show that, like, how do you negotiate that? You can't. You touched on something that I do want you to expand on. You said that your path to victory, or your plan for victory, is different from your counterparts in this primary. And I want you to focus more on the general specifically, but talk to us a little bit about what that path looks like to you.
Well, listen, I mean, we just did a poll that came out that showed both the other supposed leading candidate and myself 5 points behind Cruz. But when we added our bio into it, and his bio, and even Ted Cruz's bio, the best parts of them, all of them, we're 1 point ahead of Ted Cruz. The fact is, Ted Cruz is not well liked by even Republicans. Mm-hmm. This is a guy that has voted against the bipartisan infrastructure bill, which I call mm-hmm. the jobs bill, right? Because it brought $66 billion worth of project money to Texas. He's voted against Inflation Reduction Act bill, which I call the insulin bill, because for the first time in our nation's history, we'll be having capped insulin at $35 for people on Medicare. We have to have people that are helping that want to help all Texans. I mean, some of the stuff we talk about, quite honestly, isn't partisan at all. It's just populist. Mm-hmm. We are broken. We are everything that you saw. I mean, certainly my decision to run was started in Uvalde because we saw emergency management systems that were broken. Mm-hmm. But it's even beyond that. You know, we have a grid that's broken in this state where 800 people died in a matter of 3 or 4 days. That doesn't happen in developing countries. We're going to have this discussion with people. When we do talk about guns, we talk about common sense gun safety solutions. We don't come at it from a way that others have in the past. We talk about raising the age limit, extreme risk protective orders. We talk about closing the gun show loophole, which, by the way, 65% of Republicans agree with. But let me be very clear. I saw hundreds of hours of those body cam footages of Uvalde, and I saw all those dead kids. And we need to have a discussion about an assault weapons ban on an AR-15. I don't want to take anybody's guns away, but we shouldn't sell this gun anymore. Mm-hmm. It was made for the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. People need to understand that. And the way it tore these little kids up, no parent should ever have to feel what my friends in Uvalde have felt and would have to deal with what they're dealing with. And so we have to have a real earnest discussion with ourselves on guns and where we are and where our values are. I think that where we come from and what we talk about is real. And it's about all our pain. And it's about our economic pain on kitchen table politics. It's about the anxiety we feel when we send our kids to school. It's about the pain that we have when we graduate our children from college and they come out with a home mortgage on the back end. We need to fix that. The working class, the middle class in this state is getting screwed over. Mm-hmm. The healthcare costs in this nation for a working class family are about 25% of their net resources. The average family of four in Texas brings home $48,000 a year. So how are you going to make it when you're spending $12,000 on healthcare? How do you buy a car? How do you buy a home? I mean, you just don't.
You don't. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You don't. We have a state right now that has kicked 1 million people off of the Medicaid rolls in the last 3 months. Imagine that. And that's not even some ideological reason. That's because their claim is that their computers are broken. So we have to have a real look at where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have to have a conversation with rural Texans mm-hmm. that have been bamboozled and lied to by Republicans.
Yeah.
And said, and have a conversation and truly ask them if their life is any better now than it has been over the last 30 years. And the answer to that is no. And so we have to be able to do better and speak better to people and more clearly about what ails us. And I think that when we're talking to each other about that pain, that we can actually try and get some good things done. So we'll see.
For sure. I mean, you've gone through a whole list of priorities, and I have a feeling what your answer is going to be, given what you've already said so far and what I know about you. But, you know, say you get elected, you're unpacking your stuff into the Senate office, and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer comes in and says, "Senator, I want you to let us know what we should be focusing on for our first priority, like our policy priority." Is that going to be guns? Is that where you would like to see like the most focus right away?
Well, let's talk about the importance of this seat first. And the importance is, if we win this seat, then Joe Manchin doesn't get to hold us hostage anymore.
True. Yeah.
And that means we can break the filibuster and we can have legislation in the United States Senate come out of the U.S. Senate on guns.
Mm-hmm.
We can have legislation on electoral reform. We can have legislation on reproductive rights, because no one will then say, no one's going to stand up and say, "Oh, we're not going to break the filibuster. We're going to withhold the filibuster. We're going to adhere to it." Rather, we've got to be able to get rid of this silly rule that's keeping us from making legislation that the vast majority of Americans want fixed. And you've got Joe Manchin holding us hostage, and that must end. And so absolutely guns needs to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to raise an age limit on a rifle. We need to have extreme risk protective orders like they do in Florida,
mm-hmm.
universal background checks. And let's start a discussion for sure on assault weapons ban. I'm in favor of it with exceptions. We can have that discussion on immigration. We have to solve it. I'm tired of Republicans talking a bunch of crap about immigration mm-hmm. with no real solutions. You don't get to get up there and scream and tell the world we're being invaded and our borders and our border communities looking like, war zones. We people that live in these border communities, we know the truth, and they mm-hmm. don't look that way. And that's mm-hmm. that said, it is a problem that we need to address and we need to fix, and we can fix it. We have 12 million migrants that have been in this country for 30 years. They deserve a pathway to residency with a fine, and they'll gladly pay it. We have 1 million dreamers that deserve a pathway to citizenship. We could take every arriving immigrant that's coming to our border and say, "Look, go back to your home country, do a country of origin program where you check in at the U.S. consulate, go to a kiosk with the Department of Labor, and you go apply for a job in Omaha, Nebraska, or upstate New York, or even in Texas, processing meat or landscaping or whatever. The 30 million jobs that Americans don't want. You come and apply in this way. You get your background check in 90 days. You're going to have bus fare to take you all the way to your destination with a visa, just like our country used to do, by the way,
mm-hmm.
just like we used to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you come in a right way, and you get a job, and you're sending money back home. And you're not coming to the border and putting yourself in harm's way. It'll put our economy on steroids. It will supplement our Social Security system beyond belief, safeguard it for 100 years. And we can even create a hybrid model where they're paying some portion of their Social Security is never going to go back to them. It's just the price of coming up here to work and being able to send money back home. And so imagine that, a whole new revised immigration system that actually works. And you're never going to hear a Democrat say what I'm about to say. In 1980-something, we sent the DEA into Colombia and to work with the Colombian government to get rid of cartels. We need to send the DEA and work with the Mexican government and eradicate these cartels that are hurting people, that are hurting Americans, that are hurting our economy, that are creating a new importation of human trafficking that the likes of which we haven't seen before. What's happening now with our largest trading partner, which is Mexico, mm-hmm. with our cartels, is a travesty. And part of it is our fault. And it's our fault because after the assault weapons ban, the guns that are being produced and made here in the United States are ending up in cartel hands. We make 4 million AR-15s a year. Half of them end up every year in the hands of cartels.
Crazy. I did not know that. That is crazy. That's insane. It's adds a whole other level of responsibility on our part and reason more for to get involved and kind of have a more robust conversation about, you know, about these guns and being on the market and how much we really want that. I kind of want to take a step back and because you like you said, let's talk about how important, you know, getting someone into the Senate seat is. We know all the bad characteristics about Ted Cruz, but to you, what would be the most important trait or characteristic for a senator to have? And how do you bring that?
My whole life I've worked. As I said, my parents were immigrants to this country. Mm-hmm. And I put myself through college and law school. I worked in my professional career, as you know, in the state legislature, we're volunteers. I don't get paid.
Right.
I don't consider myself a professional politician like these other people. I think that, you know, someone needs to go up to Washington. You need to go out and create good, positive legislation. You need to come home as often as possible. Go over to the HEB and go shopping. Because that's when you see and talk to people. And that's when you see the price of eggs and the price of avocados. And you see what people are having to deal with. It is a real thing when people make decisions every day on how they're going to feed their kids, what kind of medications they're going to have to forego, how are they going to pay for health care, how are they going to pay for college. Mm-hmm. When you remove yourself from all of that and you stay in Washington and you do all the steak lobby dinners and all that crap, you forget what's happening here. And what's happening here and in every state across this country is that people are really hurting. They're really hurting. And we have to understand that. The vast majority of folks in circles in politics, they're doing just fine. They're mm-hmm. getting paid, right? Mm-hmm. These congressmen are getting $180,000 a year.
Yeah.
And they forget how much people are hurting. And we have to have this discussion. And I will come back early and often. And the other thing, the reason I'll come back early and often, I'll get my votes down. I'll try to negotiate for good gun legislation, good immigration legislation, protecting reproductive rights, all the things that are important to Democrats. And then I'll get back home because we need to focus on a midterm. We need to take out Patrick and Paxton mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. Abbott, and we need to take our state back. These people have us Hispanics living in this state like we're some kind of second-class citizens. They just want us washing the damn dishes in the back room. You know, listen, we have to bring our state back to some sense of decency, and Latinos need to pick up their heads. They need to get out and vote.
Latinos I agree with that. That's right. I couldn't agree with that more. We still have a little bit of, you know what? I did think of something. You've mentioned that, you know, that you're ready to get rid of the filibuster. I'm all for that. I love hearing that. I would love to hear though, your perspective, because you have served in a minority And the argument for keeping the filibuster is, well, like, if Democrats get rid of the filibuster, you know, what happens, like, if we're in the minority and then Republicans don't have, you know, the filibuster to stop them, yada, yada, yada. Like, can you unpack a little bit about how you're thinking about that perspective?
No, we've seen in Texas what crazy legislation does when you have a party in control for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing that's holding them back. They've stripped away every possible rule. Look at the Senate majority rule. When Dan Patrick changed the numbers on trying to get things onto the floor, now basically they can do whatever they want. True. And they do it. Mm-hmm. And so that is the cost of not voting. And that's what people really need to understand here. The extremism that we're facing in Texas, we certainly don't want to see it nationally, but there's plenty of it nationally.
Yeah.
That's why this whole notion of bipartisanship just makes no sense. Yeah. We must win. We must win in this state and at all costs. People need to vote, and Latinos need to vote. I keep saying that. But they necesitan levantar la cabeza y tienen que votar. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to take back what's yours. And you have to understand it, that we're never going to be able to do those great things like healthcare, like improving our educational system, until we take control and we have this discussion with our neighbors and we push people out to vote, people that normally wouldn't vote, people that think that their vote doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I tell people as I go from place to place, that it's their job to go find one or two new voters. And when they tell you that, that government doesn't matter, we need to go after them. And we need to tell people 19 kids and two teachers died because you didn't vote. And that's the truth. And that's the truth.
That's, I mean, yeah, that puts a responsibility on everyone. I like it. I've heard in politics that endorsements don't matter. And I have different feelings about that perspective. One endorsement that you have mentioned that your campaign received is one that actually I thought did matter a little bit. Former senator for El Paso, Senator Jose Rodriguez, did endorse your campaign, and he's remained active within the local community as far as whenever there are local races or issues going up. He has not stopped advocating to make life better for people here. And so when I saw that he endorsed your campaign, I thought that was really cool. Really interesting. I thought that it was worth something. And I was just hoping that you could share a little bit about your relationship with him. Maybe he gave you some advice for this run, you know, seeing the fight that was ahead of you, or if you had any story to share with him.
Yes, the senator is a great man, first off. Not because he endorsed me.
it doesn't hurt though.
No, it doesn't hurt. No, he, our politics are alike. You know, I think the most progressive of the candidates that's running in this race, the senator is a progressive candidate. Mm-hmm. But we come from the barrio and we want to see improvement in all of this. We want to see better healthcare and better schools, and we'll do whatever we need to do at all costs. And I'm proud and glad to have his endorsement and his support. When we served together, I mean, myself in the House and him in the Senate, he was always fighting for the underdog. Mm-hmm. And that means something to me because, you know, I spent my whole career in that building fighting for the underdog and pushing back. And so I think that he has been that kind of a man, and I'm just so honored to have him in my back, in my camp, because he really is a very special person to me. I thought he has always held himself up with dignity, and he's always fought for his community in an incredibly meaningful way.
Absolutely. You are still a state senator as you're, you know, working for, you know, campaigning, and Greg Abbott has called a special session. I believe that starts on Monday, this coming Monday. We've seen so much in this, your first term as a state senator. Of course, you've been in the ledge for a lot longer, but there has been a lot going on. Could you, want to take a couple of moments and kind of unpack on your experience as a senator, maybe during the impeachment trial, what that was like?
Yeah, this is actually my second term.
Oh, second term. It is your second. Yeah. My apologies.
No, it's quite all right. It was my second term. And so in 21, I mean, there's so many people that suggest, well, you know, you haven't passed in, you know, legislation recently. Everything I've done through amendments in my whole career in the legislature, because let's be very clear, these people control everything. Mm-hmm. These little small amendments, these little small bills they let people pass, I mean, it's just all nonsense. Mm-hmm. We've done meaningful stuff. When I was the chair of the Veterans Affairs Committee in the House, I saved our military bases from BRAC closure when Republicans wanted to let developers build around them with impunity. We had committee hearings in El Paso. I took my committee in the interim to El Paso, to Abilene, to Fort Worth, to Del Rio, and we passed legislation to protect our military bases, which meant protecting civilian jobs. That was my effort. We passed the National Center for Warrior Resiliency, which takes veterans off of opioids, 30 days inpatient in San Antonio, also in Fort Bliss. We did that. This in 21 as a senator, I passed the Farmer Suicide Prevention Act as an amendment. Sid Miller, the commissioner of agriculture, said because of that amendment, we've saved 61 lives. Farmers have the highest incidence of suicide in the nation. So we've done great things, and we've done them by boxing them in areas that they can't vote against. And we'll continue to push back. We had an amendment to have teacher bonus pay in this second special session this year. It passed unanimously through the Senate. They weren't going to vote against teachers, and they unfortunately stripped it out of the House. And I pushed that up there so we wouldn't have this voucher session. And now here we go in this ridiculous voucher session that hurts all of rural Texas.
Yeah.
Let me be clear. It hurts all of rural Texas. There are no private schools in rural Texas. Nobody benefits from it. And let's talk about who does benefit under their idea. 180,000 kids would get this voucher to go to school, to some private school. There's four. What about the other 4.8 million kids? Violates the Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution. Not one state has had a successful voucher program. Not one, period. We have to push back against madness. I will yell and scream from the rafters against these people, and I'll do everything I can to kill this bill. And luckily, we have some rural Republicans in the House that are fighting back, as well as a few in the Senate. It is my hope that people build some integrity or find some integrity and do the right thing against people like Dan Patrick and Greg Abbott, because they have taken this state and they've ruined it, quite frankly.
I couldn't agree with you more. We're coming up on the end here. I did want to incorporate something a little different for the Senate campaign or for the Senate candidates, because because it's my show and I can do whatever I want with it. So you've spent some time traveling around Texas. Let's see, or not home, obviously not home, but what part of Texas has kind of charmed you in it that maybe you weren't expecting?
Well, you know, my Senate district goes all the way to Brewster, all the way to Big Bend. And so I tell people that that's my spiritual place, because my phone doesn't work. And I get away from it all, and the darkest skies in Texas are there. Mm-hmm. I'll go to Jeff Davis. I'll go to the observatory. So West Texas has a very special place in my heart. And far West Texas, in El Paso, I have enjoyed it for sure. And since I'm on your show, I'll take advantage of that. but I think that for me, I love every part of this state. And these people certainly have done a whole lot to take what we once had. That was a state that accepted everybody. We're Germans and Polish people and Hispanics, and everybody got along, and African Americans got along. That doesn't happen anymore. They've marginalized this state so badly, and they've kept us down so long that it's just not the place that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I mean, I think West Texas for me has a very spiritual place in my heart. It's a place that I feel most at home, probably because it takes me back to trips that I would do into Mexico. Mm-hmm. And we would go through the Sierra all the way to Monterrey, little town near Monterrey. And when I go up into that high desert, it reminds me a lot of those travels that I had when I was a young boy. And so I really enjoy West Texas a great deal.
Same here. I love it. Thank you so much for joining us here on the El Paso Beat. Please give everyone a chance to, if they want to learn more about you, if they want to check you out on socials, where can they do that? Where can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. By the way, you can find us at rolandfortexas.com, social media, Roland for Texas, Instagram, Twitter, X, or whatever it's called now.
Yeah.
And, you know, Facebook, Roland for Texas. And, you know, just feel free to go give us an email if you want to talk to us directly. Donate, you know, it's going to be a long, hard campaign, and we need to raise money for sure. That's mm-hmm. sadly part of this process.
It is.
And we're going to keep going. We're going to go strong, but we've got to get more people to vote, and we can win this thing. We absolutely can win this thing.
We need to. Absolutely. Again, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us here on the El Paso Beat. I didn't catch you the last time you were in El Paso. Next time, definitely I'm going to hopefully you come soon. And look forward to meeting with you, and good luck on the campaign trail, sir.
We'll be back soon, and I appreciate you very much. Take care.
Once again, I'd like to thank Roland Gutierrez for joining us here on the El Paso Beat. Let me know what you guys thought of this conversation. I would love to hear your feedback on him. Send me an email at theelpasobeat@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me on Facebook, Instagram, or Threads. I have another fantastic conversation coming for you next week on Wednesday. You're going to be hearing from U.S. Senate candidate Mark Gonzalez. And so we're chugging away along on the U.S. Senate candidates now. Of course, we also have sheriff candidates who still have yet. Well, that it's more on me, but you have not heard from yet because I have not had the chance to schedule and have those conversations. But those are going to be happening very soon. Forgive Dobby there. I also have a couple other people, really cool conversations that are hopefully going to be coming down the pipeline very, very soon. So stick around, make sure that you are subscribed, hit the notification thing so that you know when the episodes are coming out. I am kind of leaning towards this Wednesday release schedule, but you never know. I might decide, you know what, I had this conversation, I want to get this out there sooner rather than later. Maybe I'm trying to use up all of my time before it gets refreshed at the end of the month. I don't know. So you better stay subscribed. Be sure to stick around. Send me who you want to hear. Send me the questions you want to hear talked about. And we'll see you on the next one. This podcast is produced by Richard Haneda, features music by Enrique Ponce, and we'll see you on the next episode.